Welcome to this special edition of the Huffites Institute's weekly audio podcast. You're hearing an audio-only portion from the Huffites Discussion. The Huffites Discussion is where we bring leaders in sports medicine and human performance together, give them the microphone for 15 minutes, and have them tell us their big ideas. As I said, you're listening to the audio-only portion. You can go to the website for the Huffites Institute at huffitesinstitute.org and get the full video and check out the speakers' bios. We'll be putting a new one up every 2 weeks. So thank you for downloading us, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy. Our speaker this week is Dr. Wendy Court, who is a professor of medicine in the Division of Geriatric Medicine at the University of Colorado. She is the Director of Research for Geriatric Medicine and the Director of the Image Research Group there in Colorado. She's been continuously funded by the NIH for over 20 years and has more than 140 original and solicited research publications. Her talk today is called Got Strength, Building Stronger Bones Through Exercise.
Thanks for the very kind introduction, Tim. And Tim and Noah, I want you to know that I've had my own little epiphany here today. I've learned how I have to start a lecture down here in Aggieland. Howdy! Howdy. And look, we have Tim Tebow in the crowd. He must have followed me from Denver on his way to New York. So I'm going to talk to you today about building stronger bones for exercise. And the reason we care about this is because of the disease osteoporosis. So I'm going to start my talk by giving you a little bit of an overview about that disease, talk about what the current options are for treating or preventing osteoporosis, go on to talk specifically about the importance of exercise in that strategic plan for preventing bone loss, and then talk about the exercise prescription for how to gain strong bones. So let's get started with osteoporosis. And many of you in the crowd probably think this isn't important to you because you're too young to be thinking about having osteoporotic fractures yet. But osteoporosis is a disease where you might be programmed to get it depending on what you do when you're a child or a young adult, because your whole lifespan determines how strong your bones are going to be when you get to your 70s, 80s, or 90s. So we have a very prevalent disease here. Over 10 million Americans have it, another 30 plus million are at risk, and there are probably almost that many who may be at risk and aren't aware of it. One in two women over the age of 50 is going to have a fracture, and we used to think that this was just a woman's disease. But in fact, now that Americans are living to older ages, we're realizing that it's also a men's disease in old age, and about one out of every four men will have an osteoporotic fracture. What's really disheartening is that about one out of five individuals who have a hip fracture will die within the first year of having that fracture, and many, many more end up in a long-term care facility and never make it back to their home. Okay, I'm not advancing. There it is. And it's a sneaky disease. It sneaks up on you because you can't feel your bones getting weaker. So perhaps the only overt sign that you get, short of having a fracture, is that you shrink. As you start losing height, that's because you're actually having small fractures in the bones in your back. And actually, when you have lost 2 inches in height, that's an indication that even though nobody's told you you have osteoporosis, it's a vital sign that you do have the disease. So the common sites of osteoporotic fractures are the wrist, the bones in your back that cause you to lose height as you get older, and the one that we're really concerned about is the hip. And this is because of the morbidity and mortality associated specifically with having fractures at that site. So that's really the fracture we want to focus on preventing, if we can prevent any of them. There's some good news about this disease. Starting in the 1990s, we've actually seen a downward trend in the number of hip fractures that occur in this country. This is a slide that shows these rates in men of varying ages. So the highest group, the 85-plus-year-olds, is where we're seeing the greatest benefit thus far. And I put a red line along the y-axis on the left side of this graph just so that you would notice what the scale is. So it goes up to 2,000. And now you can see on the next slide is that that red line is considerably lower when we look at fracture rates in women. And that's because women have about twice as many fractures as men at any age. But we're seeing this same decline in hip fracture rate in women starting in the mid-1990s. And I'd love to be able to stand up here and tell you that that decline is because we're getting people more active, and this is a benefit of exercise. But I think I would be lying. In fact, I suspect it's because we've had some drug development that started in the early 1990s and a class of drugs specifically called the bisphosphonates. This is the Fosamax, Actonel, Boniva, those sorts of drugs. And the use of those drugs started increasing predominantly in women in the 1990s. But if you look at the blue line toward the bottom of the slide, there's also been a small increase of use in men. So this is probably why we're seeing a decrease in the fracture rate. And in fact, osteoporosis is a disease where there's actually a pretty large toolbox for fighting the disease. We have behavioral strategies. So increasing exercise, making sure proper nutrition is there. And if somebody smokes, that's a very high risk factor for osteoporosis. So working on smoking cessation. But then there's a list of drugs that have now been shown to be effective in preventing fractures. So you have four different options that can currently be used. All of these have been shown to prevent spine fractures, and in fact, several of them listed on this slide have also been shown to be effective in preventing hip fractures specifically. Now I want to orient you to this slide because I'm going to have another one that looks like this shortly. But if you can see the very bottom, which I can't see down there, I think it says the relative risk of hip fractures in the drug group relative to the placebo groups. And then all the different drugs are listed on the left side. So if these drugs were not effective, we would expect the rate of fractures in the drug group and the placebo group to be the same, and those dark purple dots that you see on there, or dark pink dots, would all line up on the vertical dashed line, which is at 1, a 1-to-1 ratio in the number of fractures. But in fact, all of those dots are to the left of 1. And that means that the number of fractures in the drug-treated group was significantly less than in the placebo-treated group. And the reason we know it's significant is because those pink horizontal lines are what we call confidence intervals. If that line does not cross 1, we can say with about 95 or more percent confidence that that decrease in fracture rate was due to the drug and not some other chance occurrence. So if you look across those different drug categories, they all fall right about 0.6, which means there was a 40% reduction in the risk of having a hip fracture if you were treated with the drug compared to being treated with placebo or a sugar pill. So the real question then is whether exercise can be as effective as drug therapy for preventing osteoporosis, because drugs are not without risks, and exercise is by and large without serious risks. So if we could prevent fractures through exercise, certainly that would be a strong selling factor to get more people to engage in exercise to prevent osteoporosis. So here's a similar slide to the one I showed you with these point estimates, where now if you look at the bottom of the slide, this is the relative risk of hip fracture in individuals who are very active compared to those who are very inactive. And now, again, all of the points fall to the left side of 1, meaning that people who are very active had fewer fractures than those who were not active. This time, you see some of those horizontal lines that cross 1. That means that not all of these studies had a high degree of confidence that it was the activity that was the factor that was causing the fracture rate to be lower. And you also see a little bit more variability than in the drug trial. But again, those point estimates seem to line up around 0.6 on average. So it appears that exercise is indeed as effective in preventing hip fractures as drug therapy. There's a but involved here, though. And that but is that the drug studies were randomized controlled trials. If you all came here today to participate in a randomized controlled trial of exercise to prevent hip fractures, I'd flip a coin for each of you. And those of you who got the exercise side of the coin would be engaged in an exercise intervention over the next several years. Those of you who got the placebo side of the coin, we'd say, please don't exercise any more than you're currently doing it. And maybe 5, 6, 7 years down the road, we'd look at whether the group that was prescribed exercise would have fewer fractures than the group that was prescribed no exercise. That gives us the confidence to say there's a cause and effect occurring, because the only thing that distinguishes you two groups are whether or not you got the exercise. Now, in contrast, the slide that I just showed you of all the exercise studies showing reduced fracture risk were either what we call prospective cohort studies or case control studies. Now, if you came here to participate in a prospective cohort study, I would give you all a questionnaire that would say, how active are you? Might have a little more detail than that. But you'd tell me how active you are, and then I'd send you off on your own to do whatever you normally do. And every year I'd contact you and say, have you had a fracture yet? And I'd call you again the next year. Have you had a fracture yet? And maybe 5 or 10 years down the road, we would stop the trial, and now I would take maybe the top 20% that were the most active at the beginning of the trial and compare them with the 20% least active, and see if the fracture rates were different between those two groups. So it's just an observational study. I didn't intervene. I just wanted to look at whether those people who are active have fewer fractures than those people who are not. But a lot of things could have influenced your fracture rate. So we don't have a lot of confidence that it's a cause and effect. And the case control studies are even on shakier ground. Here I would have invited you, and I would have invited half of you to have hip fractures already, and the other half to not have had hip fractures. And then I'd ask the hip fracture patients, how active were you about 5 years ago? And I'd ask the non-hip fracture patients the same thing. And I'd try to find out if it was low activity levels in the hip fracture patients that might have been a factor that influenced whether they got that fracture. So in these types of studies, we just don't have a lot of confidence that it's truly the exercise that has caused the reduction in the hip fracture rates. And unfortunately, we have had no randomized controlled trials of exercise to determine that. But there's at least 4 reasons why exercise is very, very important for bone health. And the first one is because, unlike drug therapy, which we usually don't start before the age of 50, maybe even 60, exercise can strengthen bones across the lifespan. We know that if you start the right kind of exercise early in life, this is in childhood, you can increase peak bone mass. If you maintain it during young adulthood into middle ages, you maintain your bone mass longer than if you're sedentary. And then when you get to riper old ages, where the inevitable loss of bone begins to occur, being physically active can actually slow the rate of decline. So if you accumulate this over the lifetime, you can end up having much stronger bones than if you're sedentary. The second reason is that we know that being physically inactive causes a rapid and profound loss of bone. Here's an extreme case, but a study in which a group of healthy young men was confined to bed for 4 months. If you look at the orange and yellow bars, that's the loss of bone at the hip and spine. It was almost 5%. That's a rate of bone loss that is 10 times higher than in postmenopausal women who have an accelerated rate of bone loss. The third reason why exercise is very important is because in animal studies, exercise is more effective in improving bone strength than our drugs. This slide shows you the effect of one of those bisphosphonate drugs on increases in bone mineral content and bone mineral density, things that we can measure in humans. But then in animals, they actually determined how much stress a bone could withstand before it broke. And you can see that the improvements in bone mass and content were roughly proportional to the increases in bone strength. But when you do a similar study in animals, using mechanical loading as the stress to simulate exercise, you tend to get only small increases in bone mass and bone density, but these small increases translate into huge improvements in bone strength. And we think that's because if you take a drug, if you inject it or consume it, it bathes your entire skeleton with that drug. So you might lay down bone in a region where your skeleton is already strong. You don't need it there. But when you stress bone mechanically through exercise, you're going to stress the weak points that need to be made stronger, and you have more structurally and functionally appropriate adaptations in the skeleton. The fourth reason why exercise is very, very important is because it can reduce fall risk. So we know that physical activity can make bones stronger, just like drugs can, but what drugs don't do is improve things like balance, mobility, and strength. And if you're not going to fall as much, you're less likely to fracture. So getting to the last point, what is the exercise prescription for bone health? Well, we recommend two general types of exercise: walking, jogging, dancing, stair climbing, other sorts of weight-bearing activities, or strengthening exercises like weightlifting. And a combination of those leading up to a total level of activity about 3 to 4 hours a week is probably what you need to reduce your risk for hip fracture. And this is just a study that I did many years ago now to show that both of those types of exercise seem to be equally effective. If you do exercises like that cause impact with the ground, like walking, jogging, and stair climbing, you can increase your bone mineral density just as much as if you do strengthening exercise where there's no impact with the ground. And if you look at one bar there, the proximal femur, neck, that's a region in the hip that's very susceptible to fracture. That seems to be better affected by impact type of exercise, walking, jogging, and stair climbing. And that's probably because a lot of strength training exercises are typically done in a seated position. So for you reductionists in the audience, you want a simple message to take away from this. Here's your final exercise prescription for bone health. Sit less, move more. Anything is better than nothing. And it's never too late to start. For you youngsters in the crowd, take that message home to your parents and grandparents. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Dr. Court. We thank you so much for all the questions that we've got. I'm unfortunately not going to be able to ask all of them, but we picked three here. So from Dave W., do drugs and or exercise increase bone content, or do they reduce the rate of loss?
That's a great question. It probably depends on what type of drug you're looking at what point in life you intercede. So one of the drug categories that I mentioned, the parathyroid hormone, is actually one that stimulates bone formation. So that one is going to cause a rather dramatic increase in bone mass. If you look at some of the others, they actually slow the rate at which bone is being lost. So you might get a temporary increase, but then their primary function is to slow the rate at which loss is occurring. So both can occur, but the net effect over time is pretty similar in terms of reducing fracture risk. Regardless of how they work, fracture risk seems to be reduced by about 40%.
Excellent. We have a question from Kate L. Drug therapy. Do the reduced risk of fractures outweigh the risk of side effects associated with a higher risk of breast cancer when taking estrogen?
Also an excellent question. All of the drugs that I pointed out have some side effects. One of the big ones with estrogen is breast cancer. And the Women's Health Initiative trials have shed much more light on that. There was a story that came out just a couple of weeks ago showing that if you don't have a uterus, if you've had a hysterectomy and you can be treated with estrogen only, your risk of breast cancer is not only increased, it might be reduced. So if you have to take another hormone with that, progesterone, that seems to be what increases breast cancer risk. So whether or not to use estrogen for the prevention of osteoporosis is highly individualized, and you need to talk with your physician about that. The other major class of drugs used to treat osteoporosis, the bisphosphonates, have been associated with osteonecrosis of the jaw. That's been in the press a lot. And also atypical femur fractures. Those are extremely rare and are probably associated with long-term use of these drugs. So what the current position statements are for the bisphosphonates is the benefit on reducing fractures far outweighs the risk of these very rare events. For estrogens, it's more individualized because there are other risk factors associated with that also.
And I know why you're not focusing on the drugs. Those questions, of course, come up. So the last question here we're going to take is about the exercise component of this. How do high-impact sports or activities or prolonged actions such as playing catcher affect bone as you age as compared to regular exercise?
Another good question. We have a fair amount of knowledge that high-impact exercises are better for laying down more bone than are lower intensity or low impact exercises. So we do think that those can have an effect early in life that may persist into old age. And we have less knowledge about the persistence of that. But I think if you lay down a lot of bone early in your life, engaging in these type of activities, and then maintain a physically active life throughout your middle ages and into old age, the likelihood is that it will be a long-term benefit.
So be active.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Join me in thanking Dr. Court.
We want to thank you for downloading us and listening. And remember that you can go to our website at huffeyesinstitute.org to download the full video podcast of all of these talks. We want to remind you that our institute and these podcasts are supported by the Huffines family and the Omar Smith family. We hope that you have an active and healthy week.